from here. I've got a lot of curiosity. Some of the experiences you've just described are similar to what mystics from a lot of traditions describe. I'm wondering, in that state of no perception, is there what's called a knowing?
For me, what was there, there was the nimitta. I put my attention on the nimitta. It never went away. And it was 45 minutes later, 1 second later.
Ah.
Okay, so there was the knowing of the nimitta, but there was no knowing of anything else.
Right. And a personal question, really. About the unawareness of body, how do you, in your normal life, embody these experiences?
In my normal life, I don't have these experiences.
But unless they're, with you. They're part of your psychological or psycho-spiritual makeup now.
Right. Yeah? So, when I'm not meditating and having the experience of the jhana, yeah, it's the way that they're there is that they have led me to deeper insights, and the deeper insights have changed how I lead my life. So that's, it's not so much the jhanas as it is the insights. Having said that, one time I went to meditate for science, and they were going to test the activity of my nucleus accumbens. They wanted to build a biofeedback machine that could detect excess concentration, and they thought that they would measure the activity of my nucleus accumbens. Now, the average person's resting activity in the nucleus accumbens is 5. 5 watts, I don't remember, okay? So, and they, I said, okay, make it beep until I get to whatever threshold you want me to get to. So I sat down, and they put the stuff on me, and they turned on the machine. It didn't beep because my rest state was 10. That's where they got it to turn off. So having practiced jhanas for a number of years, my reward center is more active than the average person's. I feel more rewarded just sitting here doing nothing than the average person. Now, we can't prove it's from the jhanas. It might be genetic. Maybe I was born that way. Maybe it's a result of my happy childhood. Maybe it's a result of, you know, coming to Europe for my now, 11th time? I don't know why it's like that, but it is something that's different about my brain, and I would guess the meditation was a contributing factor. So, yeah. So, and I do seem to have a fairly happy life, so I like that part.
You said near the beginning you were also going to talk about the three characteristics. I'm not sure I understood, but the connection between jhana practice and...
Well, the connection is that after your mind is concentrated, clear, sharp, bright, mahabha, wieldy, given to imperturbability, start doing an insight practice. Insight practices will give you insight into the three characteristics, and that's the connection. There is a connection in the sense that you realize that these jhanic states are impermanent. They go away. And they're not a source of lasting happiness. No matter how happy you are in the second jhana, you can't stay there, right? If you stay there, you'll starve to death. You've got to come out and eat, right? And they arise due to causes and conditions. They have no intrinsic essence of their own. So, yeah, there's a bit of insight into that. But for most people, clinging to the jhanas isn't the source of their dukkha. It's more like they're clinging to their... Okay, you can fill in the blank, right? And you need to see its impermanent, unsatisfactory, and empty nature. But you can see it a lot more clearly. Coming out of the jhanas, one of the things that has happened is your normal ego functioning has been suppressed. When I was talking about what goes on neurologically, I said the parts of the brain that are associated with creating a sense of self are clearly quieter. So when you come out, you're in a much less egocentric place. And when you look at the world, you're looking from a much less egocentric perspective. Normally, when we look at the world, we're looking at it in terms of, can I eat that? Will that eat me? Well, we get a little more sophisticated, but it's basically, is this something I want to get? Or is this something I want to get rid of? And notice I is at the center of this. I want to get it. I want to get rid of it. Although it looks like the world revolves around me, it doesn't. Okay? So if I can look at the world from a less egocentric perspective, I have a much better chance of seeing what's actually going on. Coming out of the jhanas, I have a much less egocentric perspective, as well as a much less distractible perspective. And so then I'm much more likely to see anicca, dukkha, anatta.
Just to be clear, is this nirvana or is it... So the two together with the jhanas and the insight, is that enlightenment? No.
Okay, so... What is Nibbana? How much time do we have left? The talk takes over an hour. And that's only describing what the suttas say. I can't tell you from personal experience. I'm sorry. I wish I could. But, okay, as far as I can understand it, Nibbana is a realization. It's an insight. It's an absolutely life-changing insight. It's an insight into the nature of reality. All right, so you look around, you see a bunch of nouns in this room. Can you see some nouns, mm-hmm. right? Well, the nouns are an illusion. It's actually all verbs. Everything is changing. Some things are changing slowly enough that we call them nouns, but they're just slow-moving verbs, right? So, okay, it's verbs that are happening, not nouns. But it actually isn't verbs, plural, is only one verb, unfolding. The universe is unfolding, although the whole idea of the universe isn't necessary. There's just unfolding taking place. But our little pea brains can't take in the whole of the unfolding. In order for us to operate on the universe in which we find ourselves embedded, in other words, get food, avoid predators, things like that, we need to chop up the holistic universe into bits and pieces. Okay? That's how we operate. This is the so-called relative perspective, the conventional perspective. But it's not a perspective that can free us from our dukkha. Because I look down and it's my glasses, and it's my Kindle, and it's, okay? I miss the verb nature of what's going on. I miss the interconnected nature of this unfolding. So nirvana, would be looking from an ultimate perspective, a perspective where you're not caught up in the static nature of things, where you see the unfolding nature and the interconnected nature and the fact that nothing is going to give you lasting happiness. When you see that clearly enough, the tendency for craving and clinging is uprooted, and one is fully awakened. So the realization of Nibbana would be a realization of the empty, changing, unsatisfactory nature of all the objects of life, because all the objects disappeared into the holistic unfolding. And for full awakening, my best guess is that one moves between the two perspectives automatically. If you're going to cross the street, you better look down the street and see, you know, that's a bus coming. I shouldn't step in front of it. You know, if you just look down and say, oh, the bus is empty, you know, it'll still run you over, right? So you've got to operate from the right perspective. If you're eating a sandwich, you need to be able to distinguish the sandwich from the fingers, right? So you've got to operate from both perspectives. But it's very important to pick the proper perspective. If you see something desirable, you need to operate from the perspective where there's nothing desirable. Okay, so no craving and clinging arises. With no craving and clinging, third noble truth, no dukkha. Okay, so Nibbana would be a realization of the nature of the universe in such a way that the tendency to crave and cling never arises. That's my best guess at this point. I would suggest, though, that you check this out for yourself by getting fully awakened and let me know what you think.
And are there anyone around that is fully awakened or enlightened?
Yeah. As my teacher Ayakema said, it takes one to know one. So I don't know really what it's like. So, yeah. And most of them aren't hanging around where they're obviously available. I've heard estimates. How many enlightened people are there? And the estimates have ranged from a dozen to a thousand. And probably most of them are hanging around in the woods of backwoods of Asia, you know, Tibetan Plateau, Thailand, Burma. You know, they're not hanging around in Western civilization so much. But, yeah, I don't know. Who is there alive now? I don't know. Ajahn Buddhadasa was said to be fully enlightened. Looking what he manifested, maybe so. Ajahn Chah was said to be fully enlightened. Looking what he manifested, yeah, could be. Thich Nhat Hanh, I don't know. I got to get there to say for sure. Clearly, there's a significant shortage of fully enlightened beings. We would be a much better species if we had more of those. So I would strongly suggest that you get busy.
There's not a significant shortage. We just can't see them.
Well, I would think if there were enough of them, we wouldn't be in quite the mess we're in right now. So, but yeah, I don't know how many there are around. Hopefully there's a bunch, and hopefully they got lots of students. So.
Are there stages of awakening?
What?
Are there stages of awakening?
There are four stages of awakening that are talked about. The first stage is stream entry. This is an experience without an experiencer. The key to not having any craving and clinging is to see through the delusion of the self. Because it feels like there's a little guy behind the eyeballs pulling the levers, you know. I want my arm to go up, and the little guy pulls his lever, and my arm goes up, right? That's an illusion. So you have an experience where you actually penetrate that illusion. That's the first level. It's called stream entry. It's very clear that stream entry is available without jhana practice, okay? But it's still a profound state. The second stage is called once returner, and that weakens greed and hatred. The third stage is a non-returner, and that uproots greed and hatred. So that now you're in a pretty rarefied space. And then the fourth stage uproots that sense of self. At the first stage, you know better. You know there's not a real self, but it feels like it. At the fourth stage, full awakening, then there's no more feeling of a self, according to the suttas. I wish I could tell you from personal experience. But.
This is a personal experience I had. I was talking to someone many years ago, 1977. Then suddenly, she disappeared. And it's as if I wasn't present. There was just a passing whiteness that went by. I mean, it really shook me. I mean, it's the most extraordinary experience I've ever had. It didn't actually last long. But I felt there was something in it.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Yeah, when it gets really rarefied.
What I'm saying, it touched me enough. Yeah, yeah. It changed my life.
Yeah. So, I mean, was it a stream entry experience? I don't know. They say that if you have a stream entry experience, it becomes much more difficult to break one of the precepts. You know, the ants invade your kitchen. And it used to be, go away, ants. And now it's like, oh, I don't want to do that. Go away, ants. I don't want to kill you. You know, there's a real difference that takes place in your relationship to the precepts. You're much more dedicated to the path. You have much more confidence in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Those are the changes that they say take place. So you'd have to measure the results of what happened against that sort of stuff. But
it did something special to me, but I have to be honest, I came back to my own imbecility.
Yeah, yeah. The first levels, it didn't touch greed and hatred, so we still do the stupid stuff. But yeah, there's a real change that happens as these levels progress. But who's at what level? Yeah. Hard to tell. Okay, how many people got more questions? One, two, all right, that's it. Then we're going to cut it off. All right.
You mentioned before that you talked to Rob Rabea about jhana practice. And as far as insight goes, I mean, he uses books, you know, The Seeing That Frees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm reading the book right now.
Yeah, it's
very
good.
Oh,
it's amazing. And I was just wondering, are there any large distinctions between how you think about the jhanas or samadhi as he talks about in the book and how you conceptualize it?
I haven't gotten to his jhana discussion in the book yet. but I have discussed him with him. He's a student of Tanisaro Bhikkhu, and that lineage wants you to do insight practice while remaining in the jhana. Okay, by looking at the factors of the jhana and seeing their impermanent, unsatisfactory, empty nature. It's not a wrong thing to do. It's just that my reading of the suttas say, do an insight practice. Don't worry about sitting in the jhana. Let it go. So that's the difference. I would say that's the major difference. I wouldn't say either one of them is wrong. In my book, I make a good argument that what I'm saying is more right. But what would you expect? My book. But yeah, that's the major difference. I would say the depth of concentration is a bit weaker because he wants you to do insight practice in the jhana, whereas when I'm in the jhana, I'm just in the jhana. So, but pretty similar. Much closer than, say, the Visuddhimagga, which is far away. Okay, last question.
I just wondered, do you think if we were to teach this to our young people, they would feel less need to take mind-altering drugs? And I think it's because it seems to me, based on my own experience of attempting to indulge some of these states, there are some distinct similarities.
Yes, there do seem to be distinct similarities. In fact, in teaching jhanas, I often can tell whether somebody indulged in mind-altering drugs just on how they're reacting to their experience. So there's a similarity. If this was taught to kids, would they find this more interesting than mind-altering drugs? It would be a great experiment to run. I would hope so, but I don't know. It would be really nice to find out. Because it does take you to a different world, and you realize you've got all this stuff inside of you that's very different than what you thought the world was like. Furthermore, when you come out and do your insight practice, you really do see the world in a different way, hopefully in a way where there's less craving and clinging. The spiritual path is all about letting go. It's not about getting stuff. And so, you come out and you see what's really going on, and that tendency to let go hopefully is enhanced. Okay, we got a little bit of time. I think we have time enough for some guided metta. So we'll close out today with a short guided metta meditation.